This is Car Expert.
I think you'll be more thrilled in the BMW than you will in a standard Carrera S.
It's kind of nice to see an affordable performance sedan again.
I hope for the sake of the people involved and also for Tesla that something doesn't go wrong, because based on what we've seen, when it works well, but when it doesn't, the stakes are pretty damn high.
G'day, my name's Mandy Turner. Hello to Mike Costello.
Hello, Mandy. How are you?
Very good. And Scott Colley, hello.
Hello, guys. How are we?
Very good. Now, you're excellent at being a game show host, Scully. In the past, we've played Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and all those sort of things. You have a new game. Tell us more.
I do. I've not told you guys anything about this game. I've kept it deliberately vague because I like to keep you on your toes. But this week's Stellantis, which is the artist formerly known as Peugeot, Citroën, Fiat, Chrysler Automobiles, and they announced a whole lot of new mission statements for all of their brands as they go electric. And some of them are fantastic and some of them are less fantastic. There's 14 brands and I'm not going to go through all of them with you. But I'm thinking I'm going to read you a mission statement and it's up to you guys to guess which brand from within the Stellantis umbrella this comes from. Are you up for it?
Sure.
Beautiful.
Well, I'm ready.
We're going to start with a pretty simple one. Tear up the streets, not the planet.
Oh, I know that one. That has to be Dodge.
Correct. That is Dodge.
Yeah.
All right. Ding.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we get our own little lame sound effects or yeah?
All right. Let's go another simple one to ease you guys into it. We'll do Who Wants to Be a Millionaire style. It's only green when it's green for all.
Ooh. So that would suggest a volume Stellantis brand.
Yeah, you're on the right track.
Which makes me think. Peugeot, maybe?
Ooh, slightly too French.
Opel?
Ooh. No, slightly too German.
This is a confusing mix, isn't it? I don't think it's Jeep because they would talk about their adventure stuff.
So I'll give you a hint. Which of Stellantis' brands mobilised the Italian public?
Oh, Fiat.
Fiat, exactly.
Fiat.
All right. Now let's, I could give you Alfa Romeo's, but it has Alfa Romeo in it, so that doesn't really work very well. I'll give you one more, and this is a really challenging one. It is turning sustainable mobility into quality time.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes.
Do they have some sort of, wanky autonomous car division like Waymo? And it's some catch-all phrase for that.
It's not. No, it's a big brand. It's actually, I'll give you the hint that it's a title brand for one of the companies that made up Stellantis.
Say the phrase again.
Turning sustainable mobility into quality time.
Peugeot, is it?
That's Peugeot. Correct.
Oh, it
wow.
Is.
That doesn't mean anything.
It means absolutely nothing.
I've heard some. I just about said a swear there. I've seen some terrible, crummy corporate buzzwords thrown around before. And tear up the streets is pretty good, but that last one, it means nothing. In fact, it's so bland and vanilla. I've already forgotten it.
It's as if Peugeot is actually just some random computer brand or something like that, and they've just gone with the most boring generic. There's some really good ones there. So like Abarth, for example, heating up people but not the planet. Fine, I get where you're going with that. And Ram is built to serve a sustainable planet, which is kind of a fun play on its idea of, you know, serving and working hard and being all American. I think the least imaginative, though, is from 2024, Alpha becomes Alpha E Romeo.
Oh, God. That's like when Volkswagen renamed itself Volkswagen as a
yeah, for all of 3 days.
Man. And I guess the funny thing is, on a more macro sense, Stellantis, or, you know, the company formerly known as partly FCA, has been one of the absolute laggards when it comes to electric vehicle take-up. Now, PSA, Peugeot Citroën's been kind of on the ball, so I wouldn't lump them in, but the American/Italian side of Stellantis has been woefully bad when it comes to rolling out green tech. So the idea that they're all coming out strong now just reeks of investor baiting and share price, you know, consolidating. I hope that they get it right, but they've got some catching up to do.
I think a lot of it is just that PSA already had this stuff ready to roll, and FCA's gone, oh, we'll have some of that. Thank you.
Yeah, sweet. Thanks. We don't have to buy Tesla's credits anymore.
Yeah, it's like the one guy in the group assignment at uni who does all the work and everyone else goes, oh, awesome, I got an A.
But enough about my years at uni. I'm not going to tell you which role I played. You just have to guess.
Oh, another guessing game. Well, we're going to talk about Stellantis in the news, which is coming up right now. Okay, and we will start off with Ford Mustang Mach-1 news. We have covered this a lot in the past with many updates. The customers who bought this car missed out on quite a few features, Moco, but now Ford Australia has given a second compensation offer.
Yeah, the company has stepped up and as you say, offered a second round of compensation. So we know there was a bit of a drama. Customers who ordered the hardcore Mustang Mach-E didn't get some features that they were promised. Ford reckons it was a mix-up between, you know, the American factory saying one thing and then the cars landed with different things in them, and it just seems like an unfortunate situation all round. So customers who ordered prior to April 29 can choose one of the following offers: a cash payment of $5,400, a full refund of their deposit or purchase price, or the original offer of up to 3 years free scheduled servicing and a Ford performance experience, which I would dare to venture probably ain't worth $5,400. So I reckon the cash payment just might be the one to go for. I think this is a really interesting one because Ford, you know, for me, if there's an issue that you have as a corporation, that's one thing, but it's all about how you deal with it and how you rectify it. And look, I'm sure this is a genuine accident on Ford's part. You know, the product planners were told that your Mach-1 allocation will have features X, Y, Z. The cars arrive with different features. It's a crap situation. You've annoyed people. But they made an initial compensation offer that wasn't very well received. And then a little period of time goes by. Scully, maybe you can tell me exactly how long has gone by. And then now there's this second round. Am I getting that right? It kind of feels like the company should have just come out from day one and said, we're really sorry about this cock-up. Here is a generous package, because the people that are going to buy Mark 1s are the most hardcore Ford fans of all. They're the ones that you've got to keep happy. They are your brand diehards. So, yep. I don't know. It's a bit baffling.
It is a little bit. And I think what we've seen with a few brands this year, Subaru had the same problem with its Liberty Final Edition, is that these things do happen and they're not deliberate. But it is how you deal with them that sort of will stick with people going forward. And it was about a month ago that Ford offered free servicing and a track day to these owners, all of whom have quite rightly said, actually, what's missing is worth a lot more than free servicing and a lot more than a track day. It's missing quite a few things, like a proper track-focused rear differential, adaptive cruise, rear parking sensors, a lot of the stuff that makes the Mach-1 a more track-focused car than the regular Mustang, which is kind of the point of it. And that's the justification Ford used for not having these features on there. They said, oh, we're saving some weight. It's a track car. It is a bit disappointing that they tried to lowball to start with. But I suppose also it's good to see that Ford, I mean, it could realistically, if it wanted to, refund these customers and sell the cars again. It probably wouldn't lose any money. But it quite clearly wants the people who put their money down to get the cars that they ordered in whatever form that is. So at least they've come back to the table.
Yeah, but like, just to touch back on that, diehard customers don't grow on trees, especially when you're Ford and you've stopped making Falcons and you've stopped making Territories and Utes and the sort of cars that your diehards love. That's fine. We understand why. But there's this new group of Mustang diehards, and now you're pissing them off too. And I don't know. I just think Ford probably should have, from day one, made this offer and actually consulted with the people that were felt let down and maybe handled it just a little bit better, you know. But anyway, that's just my two cents.
Yeah. We will move on to the next one. The 2022 Hyundai i30 sedan N has been revealed, and we've got dates for when it's going to be coming to Australia, Scully.
We sure do. So the i30 sedan N, would you believe, is a sedan version of the i30 N.
You're kidding me.
No, I know. They're good with their names, Hyundai. And it's going to be here late in 2021. We know that the updated i30 N with the dual clutch in the hatchback is going to be here in the next month or so. The i20 N's not far off, and the Kona N is going to be a little bit behind that later in the year. So it's a bumper year for performance Hyundai products. The sedan, although it shares a lot with the i30 hatchback N, it isn't quite the same car. And that's because under the skin, it actually is a more up-to-date chassis. It's not the same car as the hatchback. It was released about 4 years later. So there's been some changes. And although they sound quite small, it sounds like Hyundai's just taken a bit of feedback on board from customers at the hatchback and tweaked this package. So like the hatch, it's got a 2-litre turbocharged engine with 206 kilowatts of power and 392 newton metres. Like the hatch, it's got a dual clutch transmission or a 6-speed manual, but it's got a larger turbine wheel on the turbo. It's got peak power coming on at 5,500 RPM instead of 6,100, which sounds like a small difference, but the sooner it starts ripping towards the red line, the better if you're really up it. It's even got a new wheel hub, which is designed to save about 2 kilos per corner. And there is an air intake that offers 10% more suction. I'm not sure not sure quite where to go with that. But there are a lot of detailed changes that Hyundai has applied in order to take what was already a good thing and make it even better. You're even able to customize the car a little bit further with an exhaust system that lets you fiddle with how much snap, crackle, pop, and they also offer you whine, throat, and bass options to tweak. So I think this is an example of what Hyundai is going to do with its N brand from now on. The i30N was the marker, the sort of the flag in the ground. The Kona N is the same car underneath as the i30N hatchback, but this sedan is a newer car, and Hyundai's just gone a whole lot of detail improvements to take it to the next level. The only thing I'm not sure about is how it looks, but I'm open to being told I'm wrong by you guys because you're far more fashionable than I am.
You're not wrong.
You're both completely wrong. And when you say fashionable, I'm currently wearing checkered PJ pants, slippers, and novelty socks with beer mugs on them. So you know that I am the height of fashion.
I just wish you'd put a shirt on in the office.
I am currently in the home office because we're all living in the home office at the moment, aren't we? It looks awesome, guys. I'm sorry to say this to you. And we all know that design is objectively true. No, it's not. I guess that's the joy of design though, right? Like some people are going to love it, some are going to hate it. I reckon it looks so interesting. Every time I see an i30 sedan, just a non-N one, I turn my head. I can't help but look at it. All those creases and curves. It's like a piece of origami with wheels on it. And, you know, sedans aren't really a thing anymore. Everyone else is making these boring crossover SUVs, which have a place, I understand. I'm not a nuffy, but it's kind of nice to see a affordable performance sedan again, you know, even if it is a front-wheel drive, small capacity turbo rather than a big V8 rear drive. It is that body style, I think, lends itself to sportiness, and I'm really glad to see it.
I just think where it falls down a little bit is because it is so overt. I think the best looking sports sedans are the ones that don't shout too loudly about it. And if you think about the old Mercedes 190E, the old 3 Series that were all beautifully sort of more muscular and more purposeful without really screaming and shouting about it. Even the Alfa Romeo Giulia Q at the moment has different wheels, has a wing, slightly wider arches, but it could be a normal sedan. Whereas you look
it's
at
not quite
i30,
as bonkers as the Civic Type R, though, is it?
It's not. Nor is it a BMW M3. The grille's far more demure than that. But Hyundai, and look, we might drive it and find out that it drives just as loudly as it looks, and I'm completely here for that. But I think it might be shouting a little bit too loudly.
Yes. I sort of agree with I saw the comment from William Stopford in the actual story down the bottom. It would look better in black. Mm. And I sort of tend to agree because there's a lot of black up front and the black paint would cover that a little bit. Moko, how do you think it will go with buyers? Because we saw the i30 Fastback wasn't terribly successful.
Yeah, I mean, that car obviously manual only was hurt by that, although the hatch was also manual only initially and sold like hotcakes. I think the strange fastback design probably didn't resonate. It didn't really. It was a bit betwixt and between, right? Whereas the sedan, it's a, you know, significantly different design. We're seeing Mercedes have a lot of success with the CLA 45 and CLA 35, and I guess they're probably the closest competitors in some ways to this car. Not on a price basis, but conceptually speaking, a really loud four-door coupe style design. And those cars really resonate with people. So I think there's definitely an audience for it. And I think the i30 hatch, the nature of performance cars is they have that peak at the beginning of the life cycle, then they dip off. The new DCT will give it a bump. But there are plenty of people who, you know, if they really wanted the hatch, they would have already bought it. And so maybe they have been waiting for a design like this. So I think you'll see uptake. I think you'll probably also find it'll be quite a different buyer to the hatch. You know, a much more overt, loud, out there kind of person. And, you know, there is the currently the Civic Type R is not on sale for the time being before the new one comes. So there's a nice little window for Hyundai to capitalize on too.
Good timing. All right, we're going to touch on what we just spoke about in the intro, Stellantis, Moco. We've got details on all its upcoming electric cars.
I love Will Stopford's story, so I'm going to read it, not verbatim, but I'm going to borrow liberally from it because I think he sums it up really, really well. So Stellantis is releasing 8 electric cars across the Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep and Ram brands over the next 3 to 5 years. They're the American hero brands, that part of the sprawling 14-company business that is Stellantis. A muscle car, a rugged off-roader, a ute, and a luxury sedan are among the vehicles that will be spun off Stellantis' new STLA large electric vehicle architecture. So Stellantis has launched an EV bespoke architecture. It's given it a kind of anachronism-like name, STLA, and it's got 8 vehicles coming over the next 3 to 5 years. So, yeah, that long-range sedan, muscle car for the Dodge brand, a, quote, very capable off-roading white space vehicle for Jeep, a, quote, heart-of-market EV, a, quote, heart-of-market SUV, and the new midsize pickup truck for Ram. The last vehicle on that list is separate to a new Ram 1500-sized EV pickup truck that will use the upcoming frame architecture. So, you know, the company's got a ton of EVs coming, in short, across all of its body styles, big sedans, SUVs, pickup trucks, you name it. 400 or 800 volt technology, depending on price. 101 kilowatt hour to 118 kilowatt hour battery packs with up to 800 k's of range. So these are long range EVs. And you can easily see Ram's obviously going to do an F-150 Lightning competitor. That is kind of a fait accompli. The Jeep white space EV 4x4 could be anything. We already know there's a Wrangler 4x4 EV coming, so it's not that. So it'll be some other crazy wild Jeep EV, you know, RC car style design probably. But it's going to be fascinating to see. And obviously, this builds a lot of hype around what those brands are doing. People have been asking for a long time, you know, as much as we love the crazy Hemi supercharged V8 Hellcat Dodgers, they're a little bit yesterday's news now, aren't they? Every other brand in the world is moving to a zero carbon future, and Dodge has just been putting bigger and bigger V8s in its cars. And so people have been saying, come on, guys, are you going to future proof this or what? Clearly, this is that. And it's very interesting to see. And, you know, I think over the next 3 to 4 years, we're going to see that brand be completely revolutionized.
It's about time. And it's cool to see that Stellantis is going to give each brand its own identity, because that's always the risk with platform sharing of any kind, but especially with electric vehicles. What we're sort of discovering, or what we're finding people are concerned about, is the fact that if you've got the same motors and the same batteries, it's really difficult to differentiate how a vehicle drives. So This Stellantis architecture sounds quite modular. It sounds like you can do a lot with it, you know, and there's different varieties for different cars, obviously. But it also sounds like the company is really committed to making Dodge Dodge, to making Alfa Romeo Alfa Romeo, and to making Ram Ram, which we've seen in the past. If that doesn't happen, buyers get confused, brands end up dying, and it all goes a bit haywire. So it does seem like Stellantis is sort of blending its old Fiat Chrysler, old American platform sharing origins with a really modern and well thought out way of doing it. And hopefully the result of that is something that can carry it forward.
Now, the big boss of Stellantis has said that, you know, his view is to give every single brand within that umbrella, all 14, a generation, which in life cycle terms is about 5 years, to prove that it belongs, to prove that it has something to add, you know, because so many companies in that joint business are not doing well. You've got Lancia, you've got Fiat, you've got Citroen, there's a whole heap of them, right, that aren't going very well. Really, it's only Jeep that's absolutely killing it, and maybe Peugeot. So I think you'll see these vehicles enter the planning, but the pressure's going to be on. They've all got to work. And if one of them doesn't work, that's probably the end of the associated brand, I would say.
It's the
consequences are high.
It's like a pre-season football or cricket match. It's a good old-fashioned bat-off for a spot in the test team.
This is like when we do sports banter in the office, Scully, and everybody else's eyes just glaze over.
Look, Mandy's a rabid cricket and AFL fan,
absolutely.
So I think we've got a
supportive
ear.
You hardly ever visit us in the office, Turns. That's the problem. You need to come and join us so that we can sports banter with three, not just two.
Come on, Mandy. There's only been lockdown 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 to stop you. Yeah. What have you been doing?
Oh, I miss talking sport with you guys. Dear. Okay, and lastly, we've got details on the Tesla full self-driving beta version 9, Scully, and there's a few little mishaps with it we've just found.
Yeah, so right off the top, Tesla calls this full self-driving, and it is absolutely not full self-driving, just like autopilot isn't autopilot. Say what you will about Tesla, there is no contending the fact that full self-driving isn't actually full self-driving. So just to get that out of the way early so we can use the name without confusing people. This is something that Tesla has been promising for quite a while now. It offers it as an option on its new cars. All the cars come with the hardware to do it, but unless you pay an extra $10,000 on the Model 3 in Australia, you don't get the ability when this feature is actually fully rolled out to use it. And the idea is it takes what a lot of cars do at the moment on the highway, which is maintain a gap to the car in front, change lanes, keep within your lane provided you've got your hands near the wheel, that sort of thing. And it's designed to roll it out even further than that so you can use it on suburban streets. At the moment, it's just a beta. So Tesla will only roll it out to people who've signed up and say they actually want the early version of the software. It only goes to select people. It's not just like my grandma has a Tesla, for example. Hers won't start doing this, thank God. So you know what you're getting in for if you do download this software. But even with that in mind, Tesla has given some warnings. It said it's a limited access beta and must be used with additional caution. It may do the wrong thing at the worst time, so you must always keep your hands on the wheel and pay extra attention.
Wow.
What we've seen so far from it is a mixed bag. In some situations and in videos that some owners have posted, it looks awesome because you can see on the main screen in the Model 3 that it's visualizing the world around it and reacting and doing all sorts of clever stuff and essentially driving like we would in our dreams expect a self-driving car to. In some other videos, it's like a drunken learner who's never been behind the wheel before. It's terrifying. There's like the car doing really jerky left turns in traffic without the driver doing it. It waits for a gap and it goes left. We're in the US here, so that's across traffic. It tries to steer into parked cars. It tries to turn into bollards. It really is early beta software, which is common in the tech industry. If you really want to right now, you can download Apple's next version of macOS or iPadOS and test it out, even though it's likely to be buggy. The difference with that, of course, is you're opting in for your computer to not work very well, but you're not opting in to potentially run into a pole or a pedestrian or another driver who hasn't signed up to this. So at risk of maybe being a little bit too open with how I feel about it, for all that is cool about this system, it makes me a little bit nervous. And I hope for the sake of the people involved and also for Tesla that something doesn't go wrong because based on what we've seen, when it works well, but when it doesn't, the stakes are pretty damn high.
Sometimes I want to grab hardcore Tesla devotees by the shoulders and just give them a gentle shake because as much as I admire what Tesla's been able to do, there are people who just cannot fathom that Tesla can do anything wrong. And the car industry is not the tech industry. You cannot use real flesh and bone human beings on roads and pedestrians who have nothing to do with it as beta subjects. You cannot endanger lives by beta testing on a public road in this way and not expect some blowback. Now, this software and what Tesla has been able to do with its autopilot system is great. For the most part, it's pretty cutting-edge stuff. But the perception that has been put out about it because of the things that have been said by Musk and other Tesla aficionados is that this vehicle is basically better than an actual human driver and that, you know, somehow we're irresponsible for questioning it because people kill more people than robots do. And, you know, we need to just come back to this. It's a beta software. It works most of the time, but it doesn't other times. It's not perfect. It may get there. But people's reactions to this technology are kind of what get me. It prompts the most polarized responses that you could possibly imagine. And at the end of the day, Tesla's just doing what all the other car brands in the world are doing. They're maybe a step ahead of some, but, you know, this technology still has flaws and people just need to understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the scary thing is that the people who are the most vocal defenders and the people who are the least willing to look at these things critically are also the ones who will sign up for early release. And
we've seen how many times has one bloke in the US been caught in the backseat of his Tesla on the highway?
He got jailed for it recently.
Yeah.
Really?
And here's the other thing, and I know we're going over time here, but it's called autopilot, right? Great. Well, when a plane is on autopilot, the pilot, the actual human, is still in charge. Right? There's still a person flying the plane. And if the proverbial hits the fan, you know, think about it in those terms, right? The car might drive itself, but you damn well better be on high alert because it might stop working.
Yeah, it's I mean, we feel quite passionately about this. This is a topic that we talk about quite a lot in the office. And yeah, we've heard some of the counter arguments, you know, early cruise control, for example, you needed to monitor the brake, but the worst case scenario, an early cruise control system would, I don't know, accelerate 5Ks over the limit and you'd press the brake into the turn off, as opposed to having to worry if it's going to accelerate, brake, change lanes, clip a pole, hit a pedestrian, go off. So yeah, we're in interesting waters here, and I hope for everyone involved's sake that the people who are using it responsibly.
Yeah. If you've got any thoughts on that, you can email podcast@carexpert.com.au. Get Tony Crawford into a sports car on a track and he'll talk for hours. Thankfully, we only have 10 minutes. So, Crawford, good luck squeezing everything you love about the BMW M2 CS into 10 minutes.
10 minutes is hard. Jeez.
Stop wasting time, Crawford. Get to it.
I know you did a track review a little while ago, but you drove this one as a road review, right?
I have been wanting to get, you know, it's all very well to drive a road car on track, but nothing sorts it out more than on the road, you know, because that's where you got to live with these things. Even the buyer of an M2 CS is probably going to be on track once a year if they're lucky. So why bother? You know, you've got to have the feeling, and you know, this is not a cheap car. It's 139,900 plus on roads for the manual. If you want, the 6-speed dual clutch, as our tester had, that'll set you back 150,000 plus on roads. That's including the grand, a single $1,000 for these fantastic, I call them 24 carat wheels. They're magnificent. They're not quite gold, but they're a beautiful semi-platinum/gold alloy wheel that harks back to the the earlier days of E46s and all that. And look, just let me say that this is the first BMW that I've driven since I drove the original CSL E46 in Germany, flat out with our boys in the car, and I have never felt the visceral experience from a BMW since then. And that was back in 2009 we drove that. So it's been over a decade since I've had that kind of BMW experience, and this car delivers it. And
can we just backtrack a little bit, Crawf? Right at the very start, you said a very, very important word, and that's manual. Are you surprised that it's come out with a manual?
Not really. I think, you know, there's not many people that will buy the manual. The manual is 0.2 slower as well. The dual clutch is a four-second car. This is a 4.2-second car, the manual. So it's a little bit slower. I drove the manual on track, and I actually didn't want to get into the dual clutch, believe it or not. I had so much fun on track. But then when you got to live in traffic and drive it normally, and you can stick it in auto and you can preset your M1 and M2 wheel button modes, which set three different levels from transmission, engine, and whatever else, the ride comfort on the dampers, you can do that on two separate buttons. So you've got all this configuration that you can get. And if you own the car, you'll set it up perfectly so that, and I had the M2 in all sport, of course, and it takes traction off. Look, this car gives you that race car feeling. It's got a 3-litre twin turbo six that puts out 331 kilowatts and 550 Newton meters. This is a serious bit of kit. And not only that, it actually sounds like a CSL E46 when it's at full cry. And you know, you can be at full cry in second gear on this car. You can rev it out big time. And it has that racing metallic exhaust note, and it comes right through into the engine, into the cabin. And it is thrilling. It's a thrilling car. And I actually said, I've had three people come up to me on the street wanting rides in this car. Like, you can't afford a 911 because they're virtually a career S is about getting up to 300 grand on road. This at 139 or 150 even, that makes a lot more sense. It's not cheap. But it's a hell of a lot cheaper than 300 grand. And uh, I And I don't think you'll get any less of a driving experience. In fact, I think you'll be more thrilled in the BMW than you will in a standard Carrera S.
So, Croft, you have driven both the new M3 and the new M4. And I know you drove the M2 on that same launch. You've now driven it on the road as well.
Yeah.
Which of them sets your heart racing a bit more? Because the M2 looks to me like a better size and maybe a better bet.
100%. And not only that, I posted a bunch of stuff on my own Insta and on Car Expert, and particularly that front end look with the bonnet with the black vents, if you like. I mean, it is absolutely a piece of artwork, this car. There's carbon fiber all over it, the mirrors inside, even the door handles are carbon fiber. I don't know. It's just that blue. What do you call that blue? I did have it in me. Misano blue metallic. It is a magnificent color, and it pops in the sun because it's metallic. And with all the black highlights on this car and those 24 karat wheels, it's just, you know, I'm in heaven. I just think for that money, it sounds a lot. Someone said, "Oh, it's a lot of money for an M2." And I said, dude, this is like, I've not seen one on the road. This is something very rare and very special. Not only that, it's as close to a racing BMW as you're going to get for the road. And it stops well. It's easy to drive. It's got a huge Alcantara steering wheel. I find BMW steering wheels a bit thick for me. Don't know what you guys reckon. But
yeah.
I can't get my hands around them. And if they just look at a 911 rim and measure the circumference, they'd get it just right. Yeah, they
big
should
grills
do that.
And big wheels, mate. They're the BMW things.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with the M2CS. It doesn't have that monstrous big grill. It's a quite a low profile unit, and I think it looks all the better for it for me. Jury's still out for me on those big grills, to be honest, but. Anyway, the M2 doesn't have to worry about that. As Scully said, it's a much more manageable size. It's got a decent boot. It does have seats that are bigger than a 911 in the rear, albeit bench-like seats the same as, but they're slightly bigger and more leg room for kids, and a decent-sized boot. So what's not to like for 150K?
I have a feeling that this car is also going to be one of those that appreciates in value. Internal combustion engine, rear drive, manual gearbox, all things that are becoming increasingly scarce. Mm. And so I think in the fullness of time, this vehicle, it's really hard not to drive it because it probably is so great to drive. But if you do happen to just keep it stashed away, I think this thing will actually skyrocket in value at some point in the not too distant future.
That would be a criminal offence if I was in power. You're not allowed to stash these cars away. If you buy them and you don't drive them, you are going to be publicly shamed and your car's going to be given to someone who will drive it.
Yeah, I mean, and the seats, I haven't mentioned the seats. The seats are insane. They're an all-leather affair with Alcantara sides on it. Fantastic bolster, but not squeezing you like some buckets. And, you know, it's got mod cons. It's wireless CarPlay. The only thing it hasn't got is it doesn't have any form of a digital instrument display. There's just two binnacles there. I don't think I even found it.
It's a bit more raw.
Yeah, I was just looking for a digital speed display and I kept trying and I couldn't find it. I'm sure it's there, right? I mean, I can't imagine a car like that without a digital speed, a speedo display.
Yeah.
But that's about the only thing I couldn't find today in my sort of fiddling around with the steering wheel controls. But, just a fantastic. It runs on Cup 2, so it's a fairly aggressive sort of machine, Michelin Pilot Sport Cup 2. So they're very much what you find on 911 GT3. So I would suggest, and I don't know if it's factory permitted, but I would probably like this car on Michelin Pilot Sport 4Ss rather than Cup 2s. I think it'd be a lot safer, particularly in inclement weather, because the old Cup 2s need a fair amount of heat in them to make them stick. Otherwise, they're a bit sketchy, you know. What a fantastic! I buy this car just on the looks, guys. Like it's just a magnificent looking machine in this colorway, with all the carbon fiber bits on it that are standard. And you know, those optional wheels for $1,000 for those 24 karat wheels, they do hit you up pretty severely on the double clutch. They charge you $7,500 for that. And that Misano blue metallic paint job is $1,700. So, you know, a couple of the options are okay, the wheels and the paint, but the double clutch gearbox, $7,500, pretty steep.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're over 10 minutes. I haven't been counting. If you would like to read more about the BMW M2 CS, you can just whack it in the search function at carexpert.com.au.
Yeah, be up next week, Mandy. Yeah, I'm hoping to have it up by Monday, Tuesday. Yeah, well, whenever Scully decides to run it, he is the all-time boss and sits atop of that throne.
That is not true. James Wong runs our publishing and there's more people involved. But, Crawl, keep thinking I'm the boss. It works well for me.
Thank you so much, Tony Crawford.
Lovely, guys. Thank you.
A couple of weeks ago, we spoke about the Mazda MX-30 with a comparison or hybrid comparison. We actually said it's not really a hybrid. But, Marco, you've driven the MX-30 electric, the EV. Mm. How did you find it?
What an interesting car this is, and it's sort of suitable that it would be Mazda that would do this, because if there's one thing Mazda has been over the years, it's interesting. This is the company that did freestyle doors and rotary engines and rear-wheel steering, and this is a company that's never been afraid of being a bit unconventional. And it's finally launched its first electric vehicle. Just to catch you up if you're not aware, the MX-30 is based on the same platform as the 3 or the CX-30. So it's not a bespoke ground-up electric vehicle, but it has a very interesting body design. Its silhouette looks almost like a high-riding coupe with a contrasting roof color, but it's actually got rear opening back doors that gives it that famous RX-8 style pillarless side profile. So very, very cool there. Tons and tons of sustainable features inside, you know, even things like the leather is cleaned with water as opposed to solvents. The plastics are made from recycled PET bottles. There's all manner of there's cork used throughout the cabin, which can be harvested sustainably without killing the tree. So that kind of stuff is all done. But the fundamentals of it are, this is a urban friendly electric vehicle. So it costs $65,490 before on road costs, which is about the same as a I heard that groan, Scully. And it's about the same as a Kona Electric or a Kia Niro, or worryingly enough, it's actually $6,000 more than the recently price-cut Tesla Model 3 standard range plus. So stiff competition. And we know EVs are expensive, but this one strikes me as particularly expensive. And it's not on account of the way it looks, and it's not on the account of the interior, because quite frankly, it's a genuine luxury car inside. Its interior is very reminiscent in some ways of the BMW i3 in terms of the materials and the doors, but it takes Mazda's semi-premium cabins that it's been doing in the CX-30 and other vehicles and takes it to a whole new level. So its interior definitely feels like a premium experience. It's more the range that concerns me. So this car has a 224 kilometer maximum range, which is in the real world about 200 Ks, which is fine for city slickers, to be perfectly honest with you. And the 35 kilowatt hour battery pack is very small capacity. And that is the reason why the range is so small. But then you have to ask the question of, well, with a range that small, why is the price so high, especially when the most expensive part of any EV is the battery? That is the thing that makes EVs ridiculously expensive still, you know, 150, 200 US per kilowatt hour. So theoretically, a battery with half the density of, you know, other comparative EVs should be much cheaper, and it's not. You know, it's $15,000 more than a base Leaf. And even though it's a heck of a lot cooler, that's a lot of money to ask for. But, you know, in a lot of ways, it's good. The light battery means that it's quite agile and nippy. It's a lot of EVs, like the Kona Electric, they feel heavy, you know, they feel their weight. Whereas this doesn't. It's actually quite agile and fun to drive. It has a really interesting fake inducted noise that sort of mimics a petrol engine. I loved it. Marich hated it. Maybe it should be switchable just so that everybody can be happy. But just to come back on that, yeah, really cool looking car, really nice materials inside, really nice driving experience. I could live with the range if I was a city slicker only, but the price, it just keeps coming back to it. You'd honestly be a bit nuts to buy this over a Model 3. And I'm no Tesla fanboy, but that's just a fact. So look, it's a bit like the Mini Cooper SE for me, you know, a legacy vehicle with a small range and a high price and some cool design that is let down by some pretty fundamental issues. And, you know, I wouldn't say it's a disappointment, but I would certainly say that Mazda has got a bit of work to do.
So who is actually going to buy one of these? Because if you're really, really keen on the best electric car, I have no doubt, just like you've said, that the Model 3 is the one you should buy. Mazda must think there's some market for it. Otherwise, it wouldn't be bothering.
Mm. They're only bringing 100 in the first year. And I think there's a few things to this. So Mazda's obviously the second biggest car brand in Australia. It needs to have an electric car because we've seen, you know, multiple states recently launch huge EV incentives packages. We've seen a growing interest in them. We learned at our experience center that we were doing that people want EVs. I wrote a story the other week talking about EV sales in this country that are up, you know, 200%+ this year, albeit off a low base. So strategically and tactically, the market's second biggest brand has to have something in that space. Now, Toyota, interestingly, the top brand in the market, doesn't. That's its prerogative. But Mazda's obviously felt differently. And with the likes of Hyundai, you know, having a cavalcade of EVs coming from the Kona to the Ioniq 5, 6 and 7, all these vehicles, obviously Mazda felt that it had to kind of keep up appearances in that regard. It's also a good way for it to train its dealers in how to service EVs and for its back end to learn all the intricacies that come with them. And I think also Mazda is pushing itself into an upmarket piece of, you know, an upmarket position. It wants to be seen as a semi-premium brand like a Lexus, like a Volvo, maybe slightly lower down the rung. And this vehicle can drive those perceptions as well because it does look so interesting. So I can totally understand why Mazda went for it. It's just that the vehicle itself is okay, but the price ain't, given the range. And so who's going to buy it? To cut a long story short, not many people would be my response.
BMW i3 buyers who need a replacement for their car.
Quite yes. Possibly. You know, there might be a few companies that take one on as like a green icon. There'll be some. The issue again is though, like the i3 at 72 grand is even more expensive, but at least it's got the BMW badge on the front. And if you're trying to make this a premium car, Mazda's got some real good stuff about it, but it's not a premium brand, let's be honest. So
well, BMW went a step further again with the eco-focused interior, down to the way that the dye on the leather seats was done and the floating
dash.
Well,
it's also got a full carbon fiber subframe. Like it's a carbon fiber tub, so it's a bespoke product. So again, it comes back to the vehicle itself is okay, but it needs to be priced like a Nissan Leaf, not like a Tesla Model 3. And, you know, perhaps that will be what happens in the fullness of time. But, you know, the vehicle's okay. I said it was all right. I gave it a, 7.5, which, you know, is about right, I think.
Yeah. Awesome. That review is now up at carexpert.com.au. That's an end to this week's Car Expert podcast. What exciting cars have we got coming up next week, Moko?
We have got a bloody eclectic mix of vehicles, I have to say. I'm currently driving a BMW 840i convertible, and I don't take the fancy cars that often. So, you know, it's a bit of a strange experience for me having to actually, you know, be in a vehicle like this. We've also got the other end of the spectrum, a Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross and a SsangYong Rexton. So quite different vehicles. And then a Range Rover autobiography just to throw it in, you know, because why not? And then, Scully, you're driving an Alfa Romeo Giulia Quadrifoglio or QV at the moment. We've got a Mini Countryman plug-in hybrid next week that Mr. Wong is going to drive. Land Rover Discovery Sport update that I'll be having a crack at. And perhaps my most exciting vehicle, and this has Scott Colley's initials next to it in the calendar, is the Land Rover Defender 90, the shorty, the short wheelbase Defender.
Yes.
I actually had my first crack in a Defender during the week. I was one of the very few motoring scribes that hadn't spent time in one, and I loved the guy in the Ranger Wildtac who drove past me doing a gagging face as he saw it. So that really, really tells me it's a polarizing vehicle. I sort of wanted to yell at him, "You've got the most boring, unoriginal U choice ever," but I didn't.
Yes.
So yes, a really interesting mix of vehicles. And then actually we've got the new Isuzu MU-X coming through, just launched as well. So looking forward to getting stuck behind the wheel of that as well. So great list of cars.
Absolutely fantastic. Mike Costello and Scott Colley, thank you.
Thanks,
always
Mandy.
Business doing pleasure with you.
Thank you for turning sustainable mobility into quality time with me.